As most of you know, I started a sermon last week entitled Why Don't Christian Kids Turn Out Right? I don't know when I've preached on anything that has been more on my heart than this subject. And as I sat in the office this morning going over the sermon that I'm going to preach to you, this is the thought that kept coming to my mind. I shared it with Jonathan earlier. And I think this is often true of preaching, but I'm more specifically focused on this morning. What parents do or don't do has lifelong impact on their children. And so I am preaching these sermons both last Sunday and this Sunday, understanding that something I say could make a difference not only for parents sitting here in this service, and grandparents, as I shared last week, who have an influence on their grandkids, but could have an influence on a second generation and what their life is like, the problems they go through or don't go through. So this is important stuff. I shared with you a couple of scriptures. I just want to mention one today, the passage in Psalm 127 and verse 3 that I mentioned last week that says, "Children are an heritage of the Lord." That's an awesome stewardship that God has put into our hands. Little, unformed lives. Little grandchildren that run around our house on a regular basis, that we have a great opportunity. Sometimes kids spend more time at grandma's than they do at mom's. Because mom may be working and grandma's not or whatever, and grandparents have great influence on those little kids. And I'm looking around a number of you, that's true of you. So don't think, I don't need this sermon. My kids are raised too late for them. Wish I'd heard this 25 years ago. Don't think that. Most of you have some influence in the lives of little children. And so I pray today, as I go through the rest of this sermon very quickly, that God will grip your heart with the importance of what I'm talking to you about. I'm not going to tell you how many points I have left because it would scare you to death, but I'm going to do the best I can and go as fast as I can. I shared with you, these are mistakes that I shared with you last week. This is very personal with me. I'm sharing with you stuff I've observed, not just a bunch of biblical truths, but stuff I've observed in real life, in the real world, in the lives of folks that I've pastored, and in our own life as we raised our children. So here are some things that folks sometimes don't get right. Number one, as I shared last week, parents set their sights way too low. Now, I preached most of my sermon about that subject last week. I'm not going to come back and address that except to say, as I said last week, our goal is not to raise good boys and girls. The goal of the world is to raise good boys and girls. Our goal as believers is to raise good Christians, good Christian boys and girls. That's a huge difference in the Christian worldview and the worldview of folks that don't know the Lord. And I ended last week's sermon by saying our goal ought to be Colossians 1:18, that in Him, that He in everything ought to have preeminence, as that verse says. So let me jump right back into the second point of this sermon today. Give me your heart and listen with both ears today. The second mistake folks make is that parents do too little too late. I'm sharing with you convictions of my soul about raising kids. One of the things that people do not understand when they're raising kids is how very important it is with what you do with your children, even when they're infants. Little people, however little, have a will of their own. And they are determined to get what they want in life. And one of the things that God gives us as parents is the task of redirecting that. And I'm going to say quite a few things as I go through this sermon that will all address that subject. But some folks seem to think, really, what difference does it make what you do with a child before they can even talk? I want to go out on a limb. You may not read this in any book anywhere, but let me go out on a limb. I believe it is more important. What you do as a parent is more important in the first 3 years of their life than it is when they're teenagers. There's a website I discovered in researching some of this for this sermon called Zero to Three. That's a website. If you want to go on that, you can find all kinds of research to substantiate what I've always known and what I've always believed as a parent. What happens when we are little affects the rest of our life. And I hate to even mention this, if you study the life of serial killers, bad people, and you wonder how does somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer become Jeffrey Dahmer, you'll discover almost always, I think almost without exception, it goes back to childhood. Sometimes people are twisted and bent in horrible ways when they're children. Things happen to them when they're little that they never recover from as they get into their teen and adult years. That website I just gave you talks about, in technical terms that I couldn't describe to you today, that I'm going to simplify, and this is the way I've always pictured it. There are, if you can picture paths, little paths in your brain, where activity creates a path. Activity creates a path, and that path gets deeper and more well-defined. Most of those paths in our mind that determine our behavior are determined before we are 3 years old. How we respond to things, how we respond to life, those paths are beaten down in our mind. Have you heard the expression, it is hard to teach? You've heard the expression. Do you know there is great wisdom in most of those old expressions? It is hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Most of us don't change very much after we really become adults. And after we become old, we don't change at all. Why are you laughing? That's the truth. You know that's true, man. By the time we get old, we want what we want. We want it the way we want it, and we ain't changing for nothing nor nobody. Amen. I'm getting that way myself. I sort of like me the way I am. Don't mess with me. I heard somebody say yesterday, there's two great truths about the government. This is a guy trying to fix the Pentagon. He said, truth number one is that the government hates change. You believe that? Truth number one, the government hates change. Truth number two is that the government likes things the way it is. They like things the way it is. Now think about that. I had to think about that a minute. We hate change. We like things the way we are. That's not a recipe for success to get anything done, and that's what we're seeing in our government. The same thing is true of adults. So we have to influence our kids when they're little. Something that occurred to me, and I wrote it down as I prepared this message. How many of you remember the term reform school? Okay, that makes you old. Because that's politically incorrect now. You might have heard about it back in the day. Kim might have heard that back in the day. They don't refer them to reform school. Reform schools were designed for what we call juvenile delinquents to be put into a facility that would help straighten them out. What we discovered in reform schools is you put a 13-year-old kid in there with a 16-year-old kid who's already well on his way to being a criminal. He will make a criminal out of the 13-year-old. Rather than the reform school reforming that 13-year-old, the influence of the older, already hardened kids will influence the younger kids, which is a way to say the younger we are, the more easily influenced we are. So I wrote down as I prepared this sermon, it is easier to form than reform. And our job as parents is not to get hold of that 16-year-old and shake his teeth out and say, I'm still big enough to kill you. You're going to do what I say. If you find yourself doing that, too late, my friend. If you have to threaten your kids with violence to get them to do right, too late, folks. It is easier to form in them what needs to be in them when they're three than to try to reform what they are when they become 13. And I'm preaching to folks who've discovered that. You know that truth is so. Let me give you some lessons relating to this. And I don't think this is in the outline, Mitzi. By the way, I told TJ it scared me when I looked back here and saw who was in charge of my sermon today. She owes me one or two, so she may get even today. I don't think I put this in the outline, but let me give you some things that as parents we're trying to form in our kids. Some lessons that I think all children need to learn, that all adults will need to learn before they get to be adults. In other words, let me tell you what I thought part of my job as a daddy was to form in my children, to teach my children. Number one, the world doesn't revolve around you. If you get to be an adult and you haven't learned that lesson, you're in trouble. A lot of folks are unhappy because they think the world ought to stop and treat them right. That ain't going to happen. Do you know that? That ain't going to happen. Help your child to learn that they are not the center of the universe. That they are one of several billion people on this planet, and their needs are no greater than anybody else's needs on this planet. And kids won't believe that because all of us, listen to me, all of us at the core are selfish. We want what we want, and we want it now. Classic example of that. Three adults are standing having a conversation. One little child about that big runs up and said, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!" The conversation with those three adults immediately stops. And whatever that little child needs is immediately taken care of. You have just taught them that they are the center of the universe. The proper response to that is to say, what have we talked about? Oh. And they remember the lecture that you've given them 10,000 times that you do not interrupt adults unless your hair is on fire. Now, most of you with gray in your hair taught your kids that. You understood that they are little people, you are big people, and they needed to learn that their priorities were below yours, not above yours, and that you treated adults with respect, and that you waited your turn in life. In everything, you wait your turn. You wait. We used to be cruel. We would tell them, "Do not speak unless spoken to." Listen, that generation raised better kids because they knew they were not the center of the universe. I wish I had 15 minutes on every one of these points. Truth number two you need to teach your little ones is that you do not usually get what you want in life. There's a movie that I don't have time to describe the scene in, but there is a line, some of you will recognize the movie and the line, but there is a scene where at the end of the scene, the lead character says, "Get used to disappointment." I told my kids that a lot. "But Daddy, I want to..." Well, get used to disappointment. You're not going to always get what you think you deserve in life. It is all summed up in one word that children do not like. I've never known a child to like it. It is the word, you have kids. Tell them no. When you tell them no, by the way, mean no. Don't mean maybe. We have a little dog at our house that's spoiled. I told somebody the other day, I used to have a dog named Darby, and somebody told me once, if it wasn't for Darby and Brenda, you wouldn't have anything to preach about. I still have Brenda. Darby is gone, but now we have Taz. Taz is the eternal optimist. Every single day, she comes to our bed, and she sits up, and she looks cute, and she goes through our routine, and she says, can I please come upon the bed with you? Because once in a great while, she is given that privilege. We'll put something on the bed. And she is in dog heaven. She comes and she hugs our neck and she lets us know we are so wonderful because we let her on the bed. And she lays there and she enjoys it. And she is crushed when we say, "Are you ready to get down?" She hides and she cowers. "Please let me stay on the bed." Most of the time when she asks, 95-point-something% of the time when she asks, we say, "No, you have to stay down." She'll go lay down. She knows what that means. You have to stay down. But the next day she asks again. Why? Because when we say no, we don't mean no. We have become grandparents. You know, we have become grandparents. Sometimes we will let them get by with it. And so they never know. Listen, on important things, when you say no, you have to teach your children. That's what that means. That they can't wear you down, they can't beat you up, they can't change your mind. This is important. When I say no, I mean no. They need to learn that. They need to learn that before they're 3 years old. Number three, someone will always be telling you what you have to do in life. Now, I'm talking to a bunch of adults. People tell you every day what you have to do in life. Can I tell you something? I don't like it any better now than I did when I was a kid, but I understand how it works now. I learned as a child that a lot of the things that I want to have my way, I don't get my way. Somebody's always going to be telling me what to do. When when I worked a real job, I've had bunches of those, they told me what time I had to get out of bed and shave and shower in order to get to work at a certain time, whatever that time was. Sometimes that was in the middle of the night, sometimes that was the crack of dawn. But if I was going to get a paycheck, they told me, we expect you to be here. We expect you to be here on time. We expect you to be here every day. My parents thankfully taught me some responsibility and some discipline that when you have to be there, you have to be there. You may not like it, but you have to do it anyway. That sounds like pretty common sense stuff. That's revolutionary stuff these days in raising children. Children have to be taught. Somebody is always going to be telling you what to do, so you might as well learn here and now what you're supposed to do in our home. Truth number four that everybody needs to learn, and that you need to teach your children. Your choices always have consequences. Some parents threaten consequences, but they never follow through. You better not do that. I wish I had time to tell you about the last time my dad spanked me. I would be embarrassed to tell you how old I was. But I remember, and he didn't do that much. My mom did most of that. She was a little quicker on the trigger than my dad. He's a little more gentle and kind. And they'll listen to this on tape, but they won't have any problem with this argument. My mom just sort of, she ruled. She liked the switch, and you guys know all that stuff. And I know that's child abuse now, but that's the way it was, and it worked. And I had great fear of my mom then and do now. But my dad, he took him a little longer. But when he worked up to it, he was well qualified. And he told me once, when I was old enough to know better, don't do that again. And I'm going to be honest and tell you, the next time I did it, it was really an accident. But I kept messing around with something I shouldn't have messed around with. And by accident, I did it again. And I found out when Dad says don't do it again, he meant don't do it again. And I paid the consequence. And it wasn't pleasant. And that was the last one I ever got. I think maybe that was the day I finally learned the lesson. You have to let your kids suffer the consequences of bad decisions in order to learn. Don't do that again. Sometimes you have to provide the consequences. Sometimes you just have to let them. Don't bail your kids out. Don't when they get in trouble. I mean, I don't mean that literally. If they go to jail, wait 3 days. Let them suffer 3 days, but you got to go get them eventually. I mean, they're your kids. You got to bail them out eventually. But let them suffer. Listen to me. That's important. Let them feel the cold. Let them feel the pain of their bad choices, or they will keep expecting that somebody in life will always bail me out. I can keep making bad decisions, and somebody will come along and save me. The government, my mom, my dad, somebody will come along and save me, and I'll just keep making bad choices. Let them feel the pain. The fifth thing, this is point two now, that kids need to learn is your happiness depends mostly on you. Listen, I work with adults all the time, and their big problem is they haven't ever learned that lesson, that your happiness depends mostly on you. I bet some of you, when you were growing up, got what I call the lip lecture. I'd be careful, you're going to step on that thing. Any of you ever tell your kids that? You look around, they're not happy. And they got that lip pooched out. They want you to know they're sad. They want you to know you've abused them terribly. You've been an awful parent. And they're not happy. And it is your job to make me happy. Listen, give them the lip lecture. You're going to step on that thing and then go about your business. Do you want your face to freeze that way? Now, this is somewhere in the old folks' parents' manual. You won't find it in the new ones. Whatever Kim and Eric are reading, it won't be in there. But you better hope your face doesn't freeze that way. Our folks, when we were unhappy, we pretty much got ignored. We pretty much told, suck it up, get on with life. You better get used to this now because the whole rest of your life is going to be this way. Everybody's going to be stomping on you and stepping on you and getting in your way, and you're going to have to somehow get tough enough to survive that. We used to teach our children that. We don't. Now, we're afraid we'll harm their psyche some way and they won't be able to survive life. So we're raising kids that don't know how to deal with life. So parents do too little too late. They don't teach their little kids those things. Number three, parents don't sweat the small stuff. I see so many things today that people think is unimportant, that previous generations knew was exceedingly important. Matter of fact, I personally believe that good parenting is primarily about little things. Most folks know what the real big things are, and we try to do the big things, but parenting, good parenting, is about little things. Now, I'm going to make some of you think that I'm a tyrant as I tell you this, but when our kids were little, as soon as they started to talk, we began to teach them some things. It used to be called manners. We taught our children that when talking to an adult, including their parents, when they were asked a question or told to do something, they said, "Yes, sir." "No, sir." And we didn't give them that lesson when they were 2.5 and say, "Well, I'm glad you got that down." And every day of their life after that, when they asked a question, they said, "Yes, sir." "No, sir." We had to teach them that and teach them that and teach them that. And they would not get it right, and we would say, "What?" And they would say, "Yeah." We'd say, "What?" "Yes, sir." "No, sir." By the way, when we were pastoring in a military town, they loved that. The military folks, they loved that. They all did that with their kids, just like they do in the military. There is a reason you cannot talk to your commanding officer in too casual a way. There is an authority. There is a chain of command that parents used to understand. I have to teach my kids that because they're going to deal with that everywhere they go in life. And respect and manners will get them way down the road today because that is basically non-existent now. To hear a little child have those kind of manners. We never let our little children refer to adults by their first name. Most of my ministry, I never had any little child refer to me as Bob. Now, I've had all kinds of folks here, and when I first came to fellowship, "What do you like to be called?" I said, "I don't care. I really don't care. I like Bob. I've been called Bob more than anything else in my life. Bob works. If you're comfortable calling me Bob, I'm comfortable answering. Yeah, I'm Bob. If you like pastor, if you like preacher, if you like brother Bob, I really don't care." With adults. And really, it doesn't make any difference to me what your children call me, except I think they need to learn that you have respect for those in authority over you, your teacher at school, adults in general. And it ought to be at least Brother Bob, because Brother Bob is a pastor. And as a pastor, we want to respect that and we want to say Brother Bob. We don't want to be too casual. I think that's important. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with authority in our life and respect. Yes, respect. That simple thing that we don't do. Please. Boy, please will get you a long way in this world. You'd be amazed. If you guys could really get this down with your wife, you'd be amazed how much more you would get by being sweet and respectful and requesting nicely than telling the little lady how it will be. I don't know how it works at your house, but telling the little lady how it will be might get me where I want to go, but I won't be happy when I get there. I try to treat my wife with respect because she's my wife. She's the most important person on the planet to me, female person, to me. And I want to treat her with respect like I treat everybody else with respect. We men want to be respected by our wives. The only way to get that is to respect our wives. I hope they do that in return. So we gave our kids many times. When they requested something in an inappropriate way, we simply said, "What do you say?" You remember that? I see that still occasionally, and parents are hopefully learning that lesson. They need to learn to say please. They need to learn to say thank you. When they don't say thank you, what do you say? Teach them to say thank you. Sweat the small stuff, because the small stuff becomes big stuff in life. Number four, talking about why Christian kids don't turn out right. Number four, because parents get tired of the battle and either give in or give up. And let me just say this so that you know that I know this. Raising children right is a 24/7, never-ending, non-stop pressure that will just drain you. It may be the hardest thing you ever do. It just never stops. These children, see, the thing is, sometimes we don't just have one. Sometimes we have two or three or four all at the same time. And just about the time we think we learned some things raising the first one, the older one gets to that stage in life and you find out that everything that worked on the first one won't work on the second one. Because they're totally different human beings. I'm not telling you parents anything you don't know, am I? I mean, that's how it worked. So you have to relearn with every child what you have to do to help that child be what that child needs to be. Sometimes it gets hard. Let me tell you two things that make it hard. First of all, raising kids can be confusing. I wish I could tell you now, as I stand here today, having raised three kids, I wish I could tell you now, and I've got all the answers to raising kids. I don't mean to tell you that in this sermon. I don't. I'm telling you some things I do know. A lot of stuff I don't know. People have pointed out often that it would be good if kids came with an owner's manual. Brenda and I just bought a 2003 Crown Victoria. It's sitting out there in the parking lot. You can admire it as you go out today. 2003 Crown Victoria. Luxury car. Francis has one. Nice car, isn't it, Francis? I mean, smooth ride. In that 2003, I was glad to see when I opened the glove compartment, there is a book in there that tells me what that symbol on the dashboard means. Because nobody can read, I guess, even in 2003, they can't put a symbol on there that tells you what that button will do. You got to look in the book to find out what the symbol does so you can punch that button and get your mirrors adjusted or whatever it is, or turn the defroster on or whatever you're trying to do from that symbol. An owner's manual is really, really handy. It tells you about maintenance. It tells you about how much your gas tank holds. So we get them with cars. We get them with everything we buy. We get them with a microwave, but we don't get them with kids. The closest thing you'll find to an owner's manual with your child is right here. And I want to encourage you, be careful. Listen to what I'm about to say. Be careful what book you choose about parenting. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of books about parenting. Most of them, I would tell you, would be best bought and put immediately in the trash because they will do more harm than good in helping you to raise your children. The best thing to raise children is common sense and biblical principles. And most folks who have raised good kids have done that with common sense and biblical principles. But it gets tiring because it's confusing. It gets tiring, secondly, because it's exasperating. Parenting is doing the same thing, saying the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And I want to say particularly that is true for mothers who generally end up with most of the day-to-day things with their children. And you tell a kid something and 10 minutes later, you got to tell them again and tell them again and tell them again. And you think they will never get it. And it does get to be exasperating. It will wear you out emotionally. It is hard. But part of our job as a parent is to say, I'm not going to give in to the fatigue. I'm going to keep teaching and keep teaching and keep teaching because I've got to get these things across to my kids. But sometimes parents get tired. Number five, parents fail to protect their children from wicked influences. I wish I had an hour. This is where so many parents lose their kids. And guys, the world is a different place than the world in which I raised my children. And I stand in front of you fully aware of that. Your job, if you're parenting kids today or trying to help your little grandkids, as Brenda and I do, it is a tough task. There are influences out there 24/7 everywhere they go that will destroy them spiritually. And we live in a day of openness. Oh my goodness, I wish I could illustrate that for you. We talk about things publicly now that for some of you, when you were a young adult, you would never have thought about talking about with your best friend. Some of you would not thought of, you wouldn't have thought about discussing with your wife or your husband things that are now on network TV at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, on ABC, NBC, CBS. I'm not talking about filthy, smutty cable channels. I'm talking about stuff that your kids are exposed to that we never had to deal with as children. This whole gay rights thing and bathroom thing and transgender thing that has just flourished in the last decade. Oh my goodness. Stuff that was never discussed in polite company in years gone by. So I'm saying to you, as a parent today, you've got to up the ante even more than I did as a daddy when my kids were home. We were very careful about the influences that our kids were exposed to. And I'll just mention two things and ask you to think hard about two things that more than any other thing I think can destroy your kids spiritually. Number one, watch their friends. Watch their friends. I remember one time, and if my son Tim was here, and he's going to be here in June. Matter of fact, he has ministered in Utah for, I think, 16 years now. And I've asked him the Sunday that he's here, we're going to have a joint Sunday school class, get all of our adults together in one Sunday school class, and he's going to do a seminar about Mormonism and share with you what some things about what Mormons really believe and so forth. You'll enjoy that. But if he was here, he would probably remember how strict Brenda and I were on him. He was going, now by the way, he was in Christian school, Christian high school, operated by an independent Baptist church. When he would say to us, as he did on this occasion I'm remembering, I want to go over to so-and-so's house. They're having a get-together for the kids. And we would say, what are they going to do? Parents don't ask questions. You might be surprised what goes on in Christian people's homes. This was the home of one of the teachers in the Christian school. We would say, what are they going to do? Well, I think they're going to show a movie and have pizza. We would say, what's the movie? I'm talking about high school. You're thinking, preacher, you got to learn to let them go. You do. Once you're sure they've learned the lessons. Here's what I'm not sure he knew. That wasn't the first movie kids from that school had been invited to. I knew what one movie that had been shown before at one of those, and it wasn't on our list of good movies. And so Tim said to us, Brenda will still remember this, well, if I have to ask what the movie is, I'm not going to go. Guess what my answer to that was? Get used to disappointment. I'm not going to go to the party if I have to ask what the movie is. Well, then you're not going to go to the party. And he didn't, because he was proud. And I was stubborn. And if I had all of that to do over again today, I would do exactly what I did then. Because that was not a movie I would show in my living room. And I'm not going to send my kid somewhere else to watch it somewhere else. Which brings me to my second point. Not only watch your kids' friends, watch your kids' entertainment. Now, let me tell you something we didn't have to worry about when I got kids in their 40s. I have in my pocket today the world. I can, by typing a few words in the search engine of this phone, I can have at my access things that are unbelievably wicked. And we live in a generation of parents who are so naive. Listen to me with your heart. This may seem radical to you, but listen to me with your heart. We have parents that are so naive that they think they can trust their kids to not go there, on their laptop, on their cell phone. Let me tell you something. You can't trust yourself as an adult to not go there. We have a wickedness in our heart that inclines us to evil. We have a curiosity about things that inclines us to go places we ought not go. It goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. And we can sit here smugly and spiritually in church and say that's not true, but it is true. And you can protect your kids the best way you know how. You can put them in Christian school, and I'd advise you to do that if you can find a good one, particularly when they're real young. You may not be able to find a good Christian high school. We couldn't. We finally had to give up. Our Christian high school was being a worse influence on us than we thought the public school would be. The movie that teacher was showing was teaching our children things that we weren't teaching them at home. The football coach who was the associate pastor of the Independent Baptist Church, when he was using foul language on the football field and cussing out the opposing team, we thought was setting a worse example of Christians than our kids would have in the public school when we finally put them in public school. Do the best you can. That's all you can do with your kids. Do the best you can to protect them from those influences. But understand, they can't trust themselves. Even if you think you've got a good, godly Christian young man, when he's 16-year-old, he's going to be interested in things that 16-year-old boys are interested in. Put up every barrier, build every fence that you can to protect him and her and their purity. Do the best you can. Number 6. I may end up just having to give you these last ones. Parents are either too lenient or too legalistic. There are so many preachers who have lost their kids by simply becoming the setter of the rules. The only lecture they have is, listen to me, son. Pardon me for relating to boys. That's all I've raised. Listen to me, son. As long as you live in this house, as long as you put your feet under my table, you are going to do what I tell you. Now, most of you are familiar with that lecture. I'm not telling you that's a bad lecture. But what I'm telling you is, if that's all your kids ever get, they will not grow up to be the Christian kids they need to be. Because the Christian life is not about just keeping a bunch of rules. The Christian life is a heart. The Old Testament law, what the New Testament says about the Old Testament law was that the law was given, all those rules and regulations were given to help us understand we can't keep all those rules and regulations. That we're going to fall short. We're going to break some of them sometime. We're going to get outside the fence sometime. And grace teaches us that grace is a heart thing. Grace teaches us that we need to try to keep the rules because we love Jesus. Not because we'll get whacked in the head if we do something bad, but because we love Jesus. You need to teach your children the same thing. You have to have rules, have stringent rules, have clear rules, make them plain, have penalties when they're broken. But if you don't teach your kids to do right because they love Jesus, all the rules in the world won't make a difference. So make sure you find the balance on that. Let me just give you a verse. I'm not going to ask you to even take time to turn to it, but let me read you these words. From the book of Deuteronomy chapter 6, and these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. That's making my point. It has to start in your heart as a parent. They'll be in your heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And it goes on, you need to read that passage of Scripture. Free Will Baptists are involved in a program called D6. You ought to go to D6, probably D6.com or D6FamilyMaybe.com, and you can find a lot of resources that we're trying to use with our children based on that verse of Scripture. But it says it has to start in the parent's heart, and we have to talk about it in our home, not at church, not in Sunday school. Children do not learn to live for Jesus in church. Much as I'd love to take credit for that. Children learn to live for Jesus in the home. Sunday school will help you, but Sunday school is an hour a week. You have your children all the rest of the time, and they are listening to you. I always said, and my kids taught me this, they've told me things over the years that helped me understand this, whatever my kids know and believe spiritually, whatever spiritual values that our kids have, we come to know now that they learn sitting in the back seat of our car. They have told us, you didn't think we were listening. When you were talking about the church members after church, what brother so-and-so said, what an idiot he is. You didn't think we were listening, but we were listening. And we sort of felt bad about that, but then it dawned on us when we were talking about our church and we were talking about our vision and we were talking about the Lord, they were listening to that too. And they came to understand that this is not just a job for Dad. This is a ministry. This is not just something Mom does when she goes and keeps the nursery and works in children's church and teaches a Sunday school class every Sunday because there's nobody else to do it and plays the piano in church. And they learned that it was hard sometimes, but she did that because she loved Jesus. It was a heart thing. Let me give you the last two because you need the whole list. Number 7, parents have misplaced priorities. I would challenge you to be careful about two things. Be careful about money. The greatest sin of the New Testament church in our day is covetousness. We have become so materialistic, we do not have time for God. We have so many toys to play with, we don't have time for spiritual things. We are so financially secure in America that we don't think we need God anymore. It is our idol more than any other. Be careful. And I'll just add to that, do not give your kids everything you can. Do not buy for them everything they want. Make them earn their way in life, even if you have lots of money and you're able. And I would say to grandparents, be a little careful about that as grandparents. Because sometimes as grandparents, we have more money than we did as parents. And we're able to do things that we couldn't do as parents for our children. And so we want to lavish it. Be careful. Just be careful. I'm not telling you don't be good to your grandkids. We try to be good to ours. But help them to learn. They got to earn their own way in life. Be careful about money and be careful, secondly, about recreation. Do not let your kids miss church for fun and games. Do not buy into, well, they have to practice ball. They have a ball game now on Sunday morning. Do not let them miss church. And by the way, as you raise them up in a way so that they will say, I can't miss church to play ball. Because church is more important than baseball. Make it their choice, their decision. Put that in your kids' hearts. And you can do that. We were able to do that with our kids. Finally, number 8. Parents are inconsistent in their personal Christian lives. Guys, I've saved that to last, and I'm going to say a word or two about this, and we're going to pray together. I'm going to give you an opportunity this morning to come to an altar and pray about what we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Let me just say it. I think, and this comes from 40 plus years of not only raising my kids, but watching other folks raise theirs. And so I want to say this with all the authority that brings, whatever it's worth to you. I think the most dangerous thing that I see in the Christian home, the one thing that will cause your kids more likely not to want to serve God than any other thing, is hypocrisy. If I can say that in a positive way, the most important thing for you as a parent to learn is that if you want to have godly kids, not just good kids, godly kids that love Jesus, the most important thing that your kids need from you is consistency in your own Christian life. They have to see Dad being the same guy on the golf course or in the fishing boat as he is on the pew. They have to know that Dad is real. That Dad really loves Jesus. Dad is not perfect. My kids had a very imperfect father. But I think they would tell you Dad was genuine. He had his failures. He had his problems. Still does. But the Lord was first in everything we did. You have to model that for your children. They don't learn it from lectures. They do learn it from examples. They say a sermon is easier caught than taught. That's true of parenting. Your kids watch everything you do, and they have a tendency to emulate your life, whatever it is. So be careful about being consistent in your walk with Jesus. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed for just a moment. I don't know if Jonathan's even going to be able to come up today and give an invitation, but I'm going to give an invitation today. I want to ask our ladies to come to the instruments. Jonathan's here. He's going to lead us in an invitation song. I want to make this real simple. We have an altar in our church that I think all of us know is not used as often as it needs to be. I don't know of anything that I've preached about in recent days that would impact more of us as a group than this subject. And I'm going to ask Jonathan in just a moment just to begin singing. And when he does, we're going to stand, we're going to pray before that. And when he begins singing, I just want to encourage you, if God has said anything to you in your life about this, if this is a burden, if it's a concern, if you're a parent and you want to get this right, I want to encourage you, slip out of your seat and come up here and tell that to Jesus. You need Him more than you need my sermon. You need His wisdom. You need His guidance. Some of you have grown kids that are not serving Jesus. You ought to slip out of your seat and come up around this altar and pray by name for your children and say, God, get a hold of my child, my son, my daughter. Grandparents, I mean, I'm looking around. I know you guys just a little bit. This room is full of needs relating to our children and our grandchildren. I want us to stand and pray about it, and then I want us to talk to the Lord.